My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Thanks for tuning in to Eat Your Heartland Out. I'm your host, Capri Cafaro. On today's show, we are going beyond the usual foods served during the Lenten season. And we're going to explore some tasty and maybe even surprising Lenten dishes. Our guests are going to give us a tour of traditions from across the Midwest. In Kansas City, Lana Yeager of Russia House introduces us to the Russian Orthodox celebration of Maslenitsa, where pancakes take center stage. Then we head to the Polish home of Omaha, where Tom Judlowski will share insights into Pushki Day, a Polish-American answer to the Mardi Gras. Now let's welcome our first guest, Brenton Brown, pitmaster of Bootlegger Barbecue outside of St. Louis, Missouri. Brenton is here to tell us why beaver is the new fish on Friday during Lent. Brenton, we're really happy to have you on the show to talk about something that I at least just learned about, even though, you know, I've grown up as a Catholic in the Midwest. We're all familiar with, you know, the Lenten fish fries, Fish Fridays, which really are a staple in so many communities. But apparently, and you've caught on to this, I don't know if you want to call it a trend, but there is at least one or two types of meats that are maybe we could call blessed for eating during Lent. And one of those is beaver. And the other one is muskrat. But I understand you serve beaver. Tell us about why, like the history behind what's the deal? Why is beaver something that we're allowed to eat? And why'd you decide to pick it up? Because it's pretty weird.
Yeah, so beaver is definitely something that's unique. We happen to come across an article from Scientific American. It's just a blog from this guy, Jason Goldman. He talks about how back in the 17th century, they were trying to basically indoctrinate the indigenous people, and the beaver was a big staple of their diet. And since the lore was land versus water, and the beaver spends most of its life in water, therefore the bishop said, ask the Pope. Pope said, make it so. So it's pretty neat that we actually found this, and then we found a farm down in Missouri here. They have a booth at one of the local farmers markets here in St. Louis, and they actually do capture and give us the beaver meat.
Yeah, I'm surprised it was that easy to find. You know, I love the fact that there is this loophole because of the whole water land thing. And I guess I'm assuming muskrat falls in that same category. But you serve beaver. You get it from a family farm in Missouri. You guys, your restaurant is around St. Louis, right?
Yeah, we are downtown St. Louis, right there at 1933 Washington, if you want to come visit us.
Aha. Little plug there. And so you don't serve beaver all the time. It is a Lenten specialty. I know you may not be serving it this Lent because of some of the COVID restrictions that are happening, but when you do serve it, how do you prepare it? And what do people think about it when they come to your restaurant and see that beaver's on the menu?
So we've done it now for about 5 years. Unfortunately, you're right, because of COVID, we didn't do it this year. We're still at 50% capacity. So the traffic's just not there to try and gather a product that might go to waste. So we don't want to waste the meat. But when we would have it, we've done multiple iterations of it. We made beaver tacos. Those are always nice and easy to make. We made boudin balls out of beaver. And we did beavers and mashed potatoes. You know, beavers and mash. And then last year, 19, we did a ratatouille with beaver. That was absolutely fantastic. Most people, if they want to try just the meat, they'll get something like the beavers and mash, which is, you know, beaver tastes like beef, but it's got that little hint of woodiness to it because that's their main diet. But they also have, you know, we smoke it, so it gives that extra hint of that wood flavoring to it. But in the ratatouille, it's just there. It's extra little, you know, oomph in the flavor. It just really makes it so delicate and delightful.
Wow. I am surprised that people are that adventurous, although maybe not. I mean, I've definitely heard of people, you know, giving some pretty interesting types of meat a try. I will say that I maybe not be that adventurous, but I was just so fascinated with this story. Did you have to look up how to make beaver? I mean, is this something, or, you know, did you just kind of wing it and decide you were going to make it like anything else that you prepare?
A little of both. We looked at some recipes, but we pretty much stuck to how we do normal barbecue, which, you know, you want to give it some flavor. So you put the rub on there, maybe you inject it with a little bit of seasoning like you would if you did a whole hog. Do that little extra seasoning throughout, but then rub it and throw it on the smoker and let the wood do the work.
Do people make a pilgrimage for this specifically? Because, you know, it took me a while to try to find someone that actually served beaver, because I was looking to see, you know, does someone have kind of the Friday night beaver feast, like the fish fries, right? But, and it was, I expected to find more maybe, you know, churches, particularly, I guess this is pretty popular in Michigan, but I was fascinated that as a restaurant, you know, you guys actually incorporated it into your menu. Do folks come from, you know, out of town, or at least, you know, come during Lent knowing that you're going to have this beaver just to give it a try?
Yeah, we've had several this year. Again, we're not serving it, unfortunately, but we've had several phone calls this year asking if we were serving it again, people from out of town. We did have a family that I specifically remember came in to go to the Blues Blackhawks game on a Friday specifically so they could come here to eat beaver because they heard about it on NPR.
Oh, wow. that's good. I mean, it's definitely a tourist attraction, it sounds like. I'm wondering, do people ask if they don't know, maybe? So say they come in and they're like, well, what's up with beaver? Do you have to educate them on why it's there on a Lenten menu?
Yeah, usually if they ask about, you know, if it's something we have on the menu, they ask, why do you have beaver? It's really just one of those things that our employees, they like it because it's something to talk about, to engage with the customers. It's a talking point, and then the word kind of travels. So you get that little extra underlying advertising, you know, draw to the business because it's something unique that you can't get anywhere else, and word of mouth travels.
It certainly sounds like it. What are your plans for next year? Do you think you're going to bring it back?
Oh, we definitely will
continue the tradition.
We definitely will bring it back. We got a bunch of new plans in the works for our business as a whole as we're expanding. So we're going to have a little bit more space and a little bit more opportunities to feed more people when it comes to this actual unique dish.
Anybody else you know around that actually does this during Lent?
No.
Or are you the lone wolf serving beaver?
Yeah, we are the only ones that I know of that actually serves beaver. I've not found anybody else that does it.
Wow. Well, I think that you definitely have piqued a lot of people's interest, and I'm sure that the listeners, and myself included, are definitely intrigued by this whole thing because it's totally new to me, and this specific episode of the series is all about these Lenten, you know, traditions that are unique, and that it makes our region, a little more flavorful. So I appreciate you sharing the insights on why beaver is part of a Lent menu, and the fact that you guys actually decided to step up and make it part of a restaurant is not just kind of an obscure sort of, you know, church basement meal. So thank you for sharing, and we'll stay tuned to see what's next for you guys.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
We're now joined by Lana Yeager, founder of Russia House of Kansas City. Lana, thank you for joining the show to tell us all about a very unique Russian and Russian Orthodox tradition that comes around during the Orthodox Lent and Easter season, something that I actually was not familiar with, even though my grandmother was Ukrainian Orthodox. So I've learned something new in my research, and I know I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, so please forgive me, but Maslenitsa, did I get it like remotely correct?
almost. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me. I am very happy to share our cultural traditions with your audience. And we say Maslenitsa.
And what does that mean? Does it have a meaning?
Yes, Maslenitsa is the name of the holiday in the Russian Orthodox Church and in the Russian culture. Maslenitsa comes from a word masla, which means butter. And it is the name of buttery week, we call it. Or this holiday is about welcoming spring and saying bye to cold winter. And again, the name Maslenitsa comes from the word masla, which means butter.
I see. So that makes a lot of sense. And in many other cultures as well, when we talk about things like Shrove Tuesday, right before Ash Wednesday, for example, in the Catholic tradition, the way that so many people celebrate that is by making a lot of pancakes, using up all the butter and egg and milk in these pancakes.
Exactly.
Because they're not going to, because they're going to fast. And it sounds like it's a very similar type of thing. So, and we can all agree that welcoming spring is important, particularly here in the Midwest, whether you're in Ohio like me or Kansas City like you. How do you celebrate this, Russian cultural tradition there in Kansas City?
In Kansas City, we celebrate by getting together, not necessarily Russians only, but Russian-speaking community. Mm-hmm. And when I say Russian-speaking community, it means people who came here from the former Soviet Union, for whom the Russian language, one of the common language we communicate, no matter which republic you come from. And of course, we invite Americans. We are here to share our Russian traditions with our community. So we started celebrating Maslenitsa when we organized Russian House of Kansas City, a nonprofit organization that promotes culture of the Russian speaking people. And Maslenitsa before that was celebrated, but maybe in a small way in some churches. And when we organized the Russian House of Kansas City, we decided to celebrate Maslenitsa, and it started about a few years ago. We get together, we prepare blini, which is pancakes. We prepare Russian jam, Russian preserves. We buy caviar, and we invite people, we sing Russian songs, we play games, and this is how we celebrate. But because we're in America and because we do not have a large Russian-speaking community, our festivals usually are quite small comparing to what is going on in Russia or
sure.
in the former Soviet Union republics, where in which you can find large groups of Russian ethnic people. So in Moscow, for example, there are like 500 events devoted to Maslenitsa. But here we are doing it in a smaller way, perhaps in New York or San Francisco, where the Russian community is larger, much larger than in other states, their larger celebrations.
Sure. We do have one actually in Cleveland, which is not far from where I'm at, because Cleveland, Ohio, and the surrounding suburbs have a pretty large Russian community, Russian speaking community, as you indicated, and also neighboring nations, and ethnicities, whether it's Czech or Polish or Serb and Croatian and that sort of thing. But we do have, they do put on, there is a group in Cleveland of a Russian community that does put that, but they were canceled this year for Maslenitsa. So I'm so glad to hear, because I always try to bring new voices in, and I think a lot of folks probably don't realize that there, you know, is a Russian or Russian speaking community in Kansas City. I did actually have a chance to have a wonderful conversation with the woman Irina, who you introduced me to, who is the has the bakery there, and she also educated me on all of this. So tell me a little bit more about the food, and it's I wish people could see. I thank you. You invited me to the Zoom celebration that you did this year, which is was on a Sunday, which is usually when you celebrate, correct? Even though it's Butter Week, you usually have pancakes on Sunday, right?
Yes. The festivity goes on Sunday. Yes.
And so it's very colorful, and I wish people could see it. Maybe you can describe a little bit of what people could see if they were to come and attend, and what they would taste, obviously, because this is also a food about a show about food, especially.
Yes. The main food item is, of course, blini. Hello.
Yes, we are here.
Yes, I just want to make sure we are still connected. The main food is blini, which is pancakes, and it is very thin pancakes. The main ingredients, milk and a little bit of oil and, of course, eggs and so on, but lots of milk to make sure the blini is very thin. Why we have a thin blini and large? They are large, the size of the skillet, quite large circle. Because blini is a replica of sun.
I see.
So it's a form of a sun. The color, yellow color, is a sun, also resembles sun. And why blinis are large? Because we want to put some fillings inside. It can be sour cream. It can be preserves, cherry, or different type of berries. Or maybe the most expensive and most delicious for Russian-speaking people is the caviar. We put caviar inside blini and fold it in different ways, and we eat. It can be also some different salads offered, but main ingredient or main food is blini with hot tea. And for older adults, I can share that during festivals, it can be vodka can be served, because just to keep ourselves warm and fun.
Of course. Of course. I love the fact that you brought up the fact that, you know, this holiday is about welcoming spring, and the blini is something that is the color of the sun, the shape of the sun, and welcoming that sun as we're saying goodbye to winter and saying hello to spring. Now, in Russia, it's my understanding, and I think I saw this as well in the discussion that you had on the Zoom celebration, that that you burn an effigy basically to say goodbye to winter.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right. We burn the image of a winter. It's a sort of a doll, sort of like a doll of like a, maybe I would say ugly woman of winter. So we need to burn it down to make sure that we say goodbye for good. So goodbye to winter for good. We are tired of cold. We want to have a wonderful and warm spring.
So now during the Lenten season, you know, maybe not everyone is observing, but, you know, what would be something traditional as far as, you know, since there are certain foods that people can't eat, you know, during that Lenten period, what kind of foods may people be eating now that the, you know, the feast is kind of passed and now we're into this period of Lent before the Orthodox Easter?
Usually people don't eat dairy products. They don't drink milk or any type of products. And maybe some people don't eat during the day. In the evening, they can eat maybe meat and so on, but no dairy products. So.
Interesting. That's I've never heard that.
I have never experienced that. I'm not at that point to get rid of any food. So, and it does, I mean, some people hold this week with no food, sort of, but lots of people continue eating, because for some people, it may be not a religious holiday anymore. It's just
right.
Activity. It's just cultural traditions. And by
sure.
the way, when we celebrate Maslenitsa in Kansas City, we introduce this holiday and festivity as a cultural tradition, not a
Yes.
religious tradition. So Maslenitsa actually became a cultural festivity. And it came, of course, from religious holiday, but became more cultural tradition, more type of a festival.
Right, a little bit like Mardi Gras. This is.
Yes.
I am so glad that you've been able to share your experience and this cultural tradition and one that I hope to experience in person one day. But I was happy that I had a chance to experience it virtually this year. So, Lana, thank you for welcoming us to your community in Kansas City, and you have a wonderful rest of the season.
Thank you very much. And we say in Russia, happy Maslenitsa, in English, happy Maslenitsa, but in Russian we say, s Maslenitsa vas. Thank you very much for inviting us and saying big Russian hello from Kansas City.
Well, спасибо.
Пожалуйста, спасибо. До свидания.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
You're listening to Eat Your Heartland Out. Our final guest this episode is Tom Jedlowski from the Polish Home in Omaha, Nebraska. Tom, thank you for joining us from Omaha, Nebraska, where you are involved in the Polish Home there in Omaha. And I really wanted to bring someone on this particular episode to talk about some of the unique culinary, you know, traditions, food traditions that have passed down or affiliated with, you know, the Polish community and the Polish ethnicity. I know, again, coming from my little corner of Ohio, in northeastern Ohio, we have a pretty sizable Polish community. And, pushkis, otherwise basically known as jelly donuts in some way, shape, or form, are a huge thing here. And they come out basically right before Ash Wednesday. And, I just eat them, but I wanted to actually bring somebody on to talk a little bit about, you know, the tradition of pushkis, other, as well as other food traditions, right before Lent and through Lent. And I couldn't think of anybody better than you to tell us a little bit about how the Polish community does it in Nebraska.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on and asking me. In Omaha, we celebrate with punchki. In Poland, the actual punchki day is called Thuste, and it is the Thursday before Ash Wednesday. And I think they do it then because it gives them a whole week to eat all of those wonderful donuts. In Omaha, we celebrate on Sunday before Ash Wednesday, punchki day, which this year was Valentine's Day, which, of course, we were under COVID restrictions, so we did a takeout Valentine's dinner. We didn't do the punchki because it was impossible to find a bakery that would make 100 dozen for us. So we did something that's also very popular in Poland called kruszciki, which is the bow ties in America, a very nice dessert. So we were able to make those and include it in our dinner. But in the past, every year we've had punchki day with a big dinner, crowds of people lining up outside to buy punchki from us that a local bakery made, and our Polish dinner of gołąbki and pierogi, Polish sausage, soup. We would have a potato soup and would draw huge, huge crowds for that. But of course, COVID this year kind of stifled all of that. But we did have a nice crowd come in for our takeout dinner. And so that in Omaha area and in Nebraska, punchki day is usually on the weekend before, not like in your part of the country where they do it Tuesday that doesn't give you enough time to eat them.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Yeah, this is very true. What's the point, right?
Yes,
I mean, you know, people are literally lining up at these bakeries at 5 a.m., you know, for a dozen, you know, and they could be Bavarian cream filled, they could be raspberry filled,
right.
You know, maybe even lemon or apple. And what are you going to do? Like stuff your face with a dozen, you know, donuts, essentially, you know, in a 24-hour period. Hey, anything is possible, particularly with those. But they're so popular. And the bow ties, which I cannot pronounce, but I know them well. They're, you know, to give a little bit of a visual to our audio audience, you know, they're like kind of like little pastries that are a little bit crunchy and look like the shape of bow tie. They have like powdered sugar on them and they're very nice. And I'm sure a great addition. And it sounds like you all made them there, right?
Yes,
so you didn't
yes.
actually outsource those.
Right.
The community there at the Polish home actually made them, right?
Yes, we did. And I do have to tell you that pączki are on sale, not just the week before Lent. Many of our bakeries here start producing them in the middle of January. So they are a staple all the way up until Lent, which I don't know if that's in your area or not, but our local grocery stores and bakeries start them
yep.
middle of January.
Yeah, our local, like the grocery store chains do have them. The more specialized bakeries are a little bit more, you know, they try to do it more closer to the traditional
sure,
time.
Sure.
But yes, very similar because they are so popular, which always just tells me, you know, about how different communities and their food, you know, and cultural traditions just become part of the community at large. You know, and so even if you're not Polish, you know, you're looking forward to this because you are appreciative of the food that is involved in
right.
just hearing about, you know, everybody lining up for the, you know, pierogies and that sort of thing. It sounds like you guys are very, very popular. I know that, you know, pierogies are also something that are oftentimes served, you know, during the Lenten fish fries, at least again around here. But it's my understanding you guys don't do the Friday fish fries, but you do
no.
do something else, right?
Right. Our church, St. Stanislaus Church, sponsors a pasta dinner with pierogi. So it's spaghetti noodles with different types of pasta. Beer cheese is the most popular. And in fact, just before I got on the air here, I'm making another 20 dozen pierogi for them. They sold out last Friday. So this is our Friday tradition. And we call it "Save a Fish, Eat Pasta" is our theme. And there are most of the Catholic churches and the clubs around the area here do fish fries, but we just decided let's do a pasta, and it's very, very popular. We sold out last Friday, so we're only doing three Fridays, and it's only takeout because we can't have people inside eating yet. Hopefully that'll change real soon with this COVID. And so that's a little bit of a different twist that we do here. And pierogi are very popular during Lent in our community also. We're doing a big takeout frozen food sale at our Polish club on Palm Sunday. We spent all last week making, oh, maybe 4,000 to 5,000 pierogi, and we will sell them by the dozen.
Wow.
We have a sweet cheese pierogi and a garlic potato filling, and then the traditional sauerkraut and cabbage filling. Now, that isn't as bad as our church, St. Stanislaus. Every summer, we have a big Polish fest the third Sunday of August. And the last couple of years, we've made up to 26,000 during the summer, put them in the freezer and sell them.
Oh, my goodness.
Sell them on that weekend. Yes, that's and we're always sold out. The line stretches for two or three blocks just to get food.
I will say at all the ethnic festivals that I've ever been to or that have been around my community, whether it's the Greek fest, the Italian fest, the Polish fest, it's all about that food,
yes.
you know, and you wait all year long, you know, for that, you know, those festivals to come around in the summer. But, you know, I would also argue that, you know, this kind of Lenten time of year is also very much a main event for communities with the fish fries, with
yes.
I love the save a fish, eat pasta, you know, and the pierogies are a big thing too. You know, people wait, you know, and it's a huge fundraiser for churches. But I want to talk a little bit more about the social clubs. And I, you know, the Polish home is a social club. And you know, I know you had mentioned that a number of the other groups, you know, German and Italian and others have their own, Croatian, I think maybe as well, right, have their own kind of ethnic social clubs. And this is something that is very customary, you know, across the Midwest in particular, where many of these immigrant groups came and settled and congregated in these places where, you know, they could be with their neighbors, continue their traditions. And how, what is the community like in Omaha?
Well, we are extremely similar. We have the German Club, German Heritage Society, Italian Heritage Society, Croatians. Let me think, the Irish. Irish are all over the place. They're the largest ethnic group here. Irish, Germans, Czech. We have a couple of Czech clubs. And we all pretty much work together. You know, we try not to do something big on the same day that someone else is doing. We're small enough to know each other. Does that make sense? You know, we're not in competition.
Absolutely.
And almost all of these were started as fraternal benefit organizations to help the new immigrants with, you know, insurance, finances. You know, the husband would die and the wife is left with children, and, you know, everybody would pitch in and help them out. And that was the way a lot of these places started, the lodges and the clubs. So, and the Polish Home started in 1936, was our starting date, right at the end of the Depression, if you can believe that. And we've been going strong ever since.
That's impressive. And I love the fact that, you know, the different clubs work together and are not in competition. It just really, you know, says to me, or at least is reflective of that, you know, Midwestern community values that we have, you know, this is, supporting one another, supporting our community, and again, preserving that heritage. But, you know, even if you're not Polish or German, again, I feel like it's sort of the same kind of thing where people will go right to these social clubs, even if they're not of that ethnicity, because maybe they are related to what, you know, someone, or they married somebody. But it is, you know, you get that real melting pot feel.
Yes, and I agree. I love going to the Italian dinners because they have the best homemade cannoli in the world, and you know, that's and then the Croatians with their dishes. I'm really good friends with a lot of the people there, and man, what good meals they put on. So I agree with you there. Also in Omaha, we're pretty lucky. We have a couple of organizations during the year that hold ethnic festivals, so we all get together, sell our food, show our arts and crafts. The Durham Western Heritage Museum in downtown Omaha has a big Christmas celebration, ethnic Christmas.
Oh, wow.
We each decorate a tree. Our Polish choir sings Polish hymns, and we have a polka band that'll play, and we have Polish dancers, and every other ethnic group does this also. And that's usually the first weekend of December. And then in the, about this time of year, and now this year, of course, we didn't do this, but usually in March, the University of Nebraska at Omaha sponsors an ethnic fest, and we all get together and each have a table. Sometimes provide entertainment, sometimes provide food, depending on what they want. So, and so we get to know each other. Do you know what I mean? Each of the ethnic groups, things like that. And it's really nice to see especially the arts and crafts of all of the different organizations. There are a lot of people, even the younger ones. I'm in my 60s, but there are a lot of 30 and 40 year olds that are trying very hard to teach their children all of the customs of the different ethnic groups. Do you know what I mean? To give them more of a variety of what the different cultures are. So we're fortunate in that
way. Right. Well, it's right in your backyard.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. It's right in your backyard. You have that ability to, you know, have that kind of camaraderie and have that be a teaching experience. And I would definitely say that, you know, for our communities here as well, I think you get spoiled. And when we originally spoke, I kind of felt when you were talking about the different, you know, fraternal organizations or social clubs of the different ethnic groups, you know, I was thinking about how throughout the Midwest and in places like Milwaukee and Detroit and certainly Cleveland and, you know, those surrounding areas, I think it's spoiled because we have all these festivals. We have this chance to eat all these different types of foods. You know, maybe it's not, you know, like a New York City where you have all these different restaurants necessarily, although I beg to differ. I think there's a lot of variety in our communities that people are surprised about. But these are real grassroots communities passing along these traditions, which is, and doing it through food oftentimes.
Right. Yes. You know, I agree with you 100%. We are spoiled in that way, at least here in the Omaha area. you know, it's a fact of life for us.
That's right. Well, I have learned more about Omaha. I certainly have. Because I don't think I've actually ever been. So I'm now motivated to head out to Omaha and maybe experience one of these summer festivals. But in the meantime, I definitely want to find myself some pierogies, right, which we can get our hands on here. But thank you so much, Tom, for sharing the cultural and food traditions of the Polish community there in Omaha and making us all very hungry in the process.
Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.